Okay, we're in chapter 13. Chapter 13 is not a good chapter. As they say, well, it's very interesting. I mean, David sinned, and he felt bad about his sin, and now he goes through part of the atonement process. And it's not pleasant. One of the things I talked about was that being great doesn't mean being perfect, but it means responding in the right way. I saw a beautiful vort actually on this week's Haftorah, about Shimshon, Samson. He's the only leader that we find that even after he died, he had an effect, because it says for 20 years after he died, the Plishtim stayed away from us. We were at peace. And so usually the leader was effective when they were around, but once they were no longer around, they weren't effective. Yet with him, 20 years later, the Plishtim did... I mean, just imagine if we had a leader like that in Israel that could guarantee us peace for 20 years even after they leave office, right? It's unbelievable. So why did he merit that he should be such a great leader that even after he's gone for 20 years, the Plishtim didn't dare lift a finger against us? So what I saw was that he had sinned at the end of his life. If you remember the beginning of his life, he was a great person and a leader. And then at the end, he had a fallout. He had a Philistine wife, and he was captured, and he was put in the dungeon, and he was running the mill. And in the midst of his big downfall, he remembered Hashem. And he called out to Hashem. He said, Hashem, remember me just this one time. And if a person, even after they've fallen in life, even after they've, you know, they've made their big mistake, they pick themselves up, they reach out to Hashem. So in Hashem's eyes, that's extremely powerful. Because that's, you know, sometimes when people are down, they give up and they don't... but he, when he, it says that he killed more Plishtim in his death than he ever did during his lifetime. And so the idea was that even after everything happened, he turned to Hashem. And so that's really the message of David HaMelech, or of all things, is that it's never too late to turn to Hashem. And even when a person's been through a lot, we still turn to Hashem in that way.
Was that at the moment of his death that he asked Hashem to remember him?
Mm-hmm. Remember, he was had him place him on the pillars of the building and said, give me, you know, one more time. It was that. Okay. Vayehi. Akri. Now, by the way, whenever it uses the word vayehi, it's always bad. That's always a hint to us in Tanakh that something that's going to happen won't be good. Vayehi. The famous one is vayehi bimeach Hashverosh. And it was. And it was like, oh no, this is what happened. Okay, so this is what happened. Alav Shalom ben David. And Avshalom, the son of David, Achos Yafa, he had a beautiful sister, Ushmo Tamar, and her name was Tamar, the Yahaveha Amnon ben David. And Amnon, the son of David, fell in love with her. He loved her, it says. So, there's a lot of big questions here about the family relationship. What does it mean that he was the sister of Avshalom? Wasn't he the daughter of David? So if she was, and we're going to see later that in a few short verses that he's going to suggest maybe that you just ask David for her hand. David would not allow a brother to marry a sister. So some people suggest that she was really not a child of David, but that she was a sister. She was related to Avshalom, but perhaps the mother had been pregnant when David had married her, and that she was really not a real sister to Amnon. And that's why technically Amnon could have married her. Could be that it wasn't done or it wasn't appropriate, but she wasn't a real sister, because if she was a real sister, there'd be nothing to talk about. But again, there's both views. So, but and that could be why she calls her the sister of Avshalom. One of the things we're going to see is that David HaMelech, the Torah mentions a what's called the captive maiden, the Yafas Torah, and that it allows a soldier to take a woman as a wife in battle. That's what the Torah talks about. And it's listed that David took several wives that way. These were nations that were conquered. Some people, the question is, that doesn't sound a very good way to establish a family or set an example. So the truth is, the Torah, right after it mentions that, talks about how you have rebellious children. You know, right after the Torah talks about taking a wife in war, it mentions that people's children, what do you do if your children rebel and they don't listen? And what they're trying to say, Rashi says, the Torah is not telling a person to take a captive maiden. It's not telling a person to, you know, just because he's overseas and hasn't seen a woman for many years and he's just saw his best friend being killed and all of a sudden he meets a beautiful woman and he can't hold himself back. It's not saying that he should do that. In fact, the Torah is saying you do that, you're asking for tragedy, because the Torah mentions right afterwards, if you have two wives, one that you love and one that you don't, and that if you marry for beauty, the beauty fades. You got to marry because of that's what a person is, not because of how they look. And so the Torah is really not telling us that a person should do that. On the other hand, the Torah felt that in certain people would do it anyways, and the Torah said, some people view that this was a strategy. If you said not to, you can't always tell men in times of war not to do certain things. But if you say, well, if you want to take her, first you got to bring her home, and first you have to change her clothing and mourn for her family. And so after you go through that whole episode, you're not going to want to marry her. You're going to set her free, which is really what most of the commentators understand. We live in hindsight. In other words, when the Torah permitted that, we can look back and say that doesn't mean that it was a good idea. David lived at a time where the Torah was still somewhat new, and perhaps he thought it was a bad idea. Now, how could it not be a bad idea? They lived in constant fear in those days of neighboring, somewhat like we do today, of neighboring countries that would attack. And as soon as they felt they were strong enough, they would attack. And sometimes in order to put fear into them, it was necessary to show that if we fight you in battle, then you're going to lose, and so you don't want to mess with us. And the deterrent will save lives, the nuclear deterrent. So we find that in order to save lives, David did certain things that to us we say, how could he do it? But in the end, it did save lives, because there was peace. By the time his son took over, they no longer had to worry about it. And so for many, many generations afterwards, war is not a pleasant thing, but sometimes you have to fight a war in order to get peace. And so if part of a war meant that you had to show you were victorious over many nations and that you had these women that were from the conquered countries, now you might say, well, is it right to take a woman against her will? This is not talking about that. These are not, nobody, the Torah doesn't allow anybody to be taken against their will. In those days, this was just part of the, when people won a battle, the part of the conquest was that the women went to the other side or whatever. Nobody would, there's no understanding that somebody's allowed to physically force anybody to do anything that they're now. You're not allowed to injure a person. You're not allowed to cause them pain or harm or embarrassment, Jew or non-Jew. If it was commonly accepted that the victor would be able to take wives amongst the women, as it was done, so the question was how David made a mistake in that way. There also was an element of something that we saw in the times of Shlomo, which was that if you allowed certain families to marry into the royal line, that meant there was a treaty between you and their country, and that you could do business with them. And if you refused to take a princess from that country, that meant we don't have anything to do with you. We won't. We loathe you. But if you would take a daughter from that country, and so in part of these, again, we can't put ourselves exactly into that mindset. But there is no question that some of the women that David took were women that were from these nations that they conquered. And we're going to see that the children that were born of these relationships could be, that's what happens when you take somebody for the wrong reason, we're going to see Avshalom was another example. So there are really two children. Tamar and Avshalom were both from these wives that were taken in these battles. So, but let's see what happens. Vayetzer la'amnon l'schalos bavur Tamar achosav. And Amnon was lovesick. And it's a the Gemara mentions, I mean, to us we kind of laugh, but that a person can fall in love and literally be sick over not, if they can't have their love. Today, sometimes it exhibits itself in different ways. Teenagers sometimes commit suicide if they're jilted by their love, or they can't have their, sometimes they make themselves sick, so they'll be so skinny, so they'll be attractive, so they can get their love. In other words, we have love sickness today. I don't think we call it that. There is sometimes a person is so infatuated and so focused on something, if they don't get it, they don't eat, they don't sleep, they don't, you know, that's the, so this is what was happening to Amnon. He was the son of David, and he fell in love with a princess. The problem was the princess was either his half-sister or not his sister at all, but was part of the people that were raised up like princesses, the whole, so, now, by Kibasuli, she was unmarried, and he really wanted her. But he didn't know what he could do. In other words, here it's like the Romeo and Juliet. You know, he fell in love with her, and he had no means to get her. It's the wrong, you know, the wrong kind of relationship, because she's not. It's almost like he doesn't ask her opinion in the matter at all. He just sees her and falls in love with her. There are those that view the sin of David with Bathsheba was also a kind of love at first sight kind of thing. Kind of, he saw her and decided he had to have her, and so therefore he's punished by having that in his family. The same kind of thing. Verse 3. Now there are a lot of people that have the wrong thoughts or the wrong ideas. And it disappears because they don't act on those thoughts or ideas. Sometimes it's a really evil person who allows another person to act on their ideas. And that's what happens over here. He has a friend, Amnon Rea. He had a friend, Ushmo Yonadav ben Shimi. And his name was Yonadav ben Shimi. It was a cousin. V'yonadav ish chacham. This guy was very smart. Now, usually being very smart is a compliment. Sometimes you can be smart in a wicked way. In other words, a person who uses their intelligence to cause harm can be like an evil kind of smart. This guy was an evil kind of smart. But Yomelo, and he said to him the following, Madu ata kocha, how come you look so sad, Dal? Ben Ameli, you're a prince. Princes, everybody would give anything to be in your position. Why do you look, you're a prince? But Boka, every morning, Alotagli, tell me what's bothering you. Why, a prince who, you know, the son of King David, why do you look like that? But Yomelo, Amnon etamachos. Avshalom Achiyani, I'm in love with my half-sister. And I can't have her, so what am I going to do? Verse 5, Yomar lo yanadav shachal mishka. He says, I'll tell you how, no problem. What you got to do is pretend to be sick. Lie down in bed. V'hiska uba avicha liroska. And of course, if you're not feeling well, your father will come to see how you're doing. He'll come visit you. And of course, if your father comes to visit you, what do you do when you visit the sick? You say, can I get anything for you? What do you need? Right? That's what, you know, you visit someone, what can I get? Especially parents. So, you know, the Jewish remedy for sickness? Chicken soup. With dumplings. So he says, the king will say, what can I get for you? But tell him, he says, you know, I need some dumplings. I need some, the one who makes the best dumplings is Tamar. Just happened to be. She was a known chef. She was that was one of the things that Tamra hosted. Tevreni lechem, you know, let her. I need, you know, if that. I think that would make me feel better. Give me energy if you could have Tamar come and bring me some of her special. What are they called? They call them blintzes. I don't know what these things are. The dumplings or blintzes.
Matzah balls.
Okay. It seems like it was fried. But he said, so they were going to arrange for it, but he said, I only like them when they're fresh out of the pot. I don't like them when they're old, they get hard. I want them fresh out of the pot. You know, when a person is sick, they're very picky. If the food doesn't look right, it sits on the tray. You know, it's got to be exactly what they're in the mood. Because it's a person is sick, they don't get any exercise, and it's hard to push the food down. And so they really need it to be just the way it is. So he tells the king, you know, I it would only be good if it's just like made fresh, right, you know, straight from the pot. In other words, if she makes it straight for me, you know, I think I could bring myself to eat something. So David HaMelech did not suspect, you know, it just sounded like a very innocent thing. This was his, you know, his sister also was like one of his sisters. And now the interesting thing is that he had to ask permission from the king for this to take place. So we see that the princes and the princesses didn't hang around together. That wasn't like the usual, you had to ask permission for that. That wasn't automatically assumed that, you know, that that could happen.
It would seem that because they had to ask permission, mm-hmm. David
It seemed very innocent. He was not feeling well, and he wanted the chicken soup, and that's what he said. He said, you know, he hadn't been eating for days, and the king said, "How can we get, you know, what can you know, what can get from the royal table that really interests you?" And he says, "You know, I'm not really hungry for that much, but you know, if Tamar would make her dish, her special meal, then yeah, I think I could eat that." So. He needs to let her make these two things forever, and I'll get healed. So David sends to Tamar, Lamor, Lechina, please do me a favor. Go to Amnon's house, go to his chambers, and make him this food that you make somebody makes him feel better. So verse 8, so she went to her brother's room, and he's lying down. And she makes it fresh in front of him. There's nothing like fresh food, right? She makes it fresh, and she cooks them. Verse 9, and he says, no, thank you. I'm not interested. And she was like, you know, this was the mission from the king. Get him to eat. The king said, get him to eat. So, Amnon says, there's too many people watching, you know, like there's a crowd, everybody's like trying to stuff him, you know, trying to get him to eat. So he says, I'm not comfortable eating with so many people around. Let the other people go out. Hotzi kolish molai, let them leave. So again, nobody suspects him. Yotzi kolish molai. Now, today we have a rule that is very interesting. The Torah does not forbid a man to be alone with a woman. Unmarried man to be alone with an unmarried woman. So it doesn't say, thou shalt not be alone with somebody from the... It doesn't forbid it. Because of what's going to happen here, the nation went into shock. It was just never... I mean, when you think about it, we went a few hundred years in ancient times where this was never a problem, where no Jewish... It's almost like, I think, you know, the state of Israel, they didn't used to have a police force or a murder section. I mean, now we're a big, you know, because it was just Jews never did crime to fellow Jews. It was unheard of. Jews don't kill Jews. I'll tell that to Rabin, but I'm saying, but before that, it didn't happen, right? There never was such things as forcing women or taking women or people being improper. No one ever had to think about those kinds of things. But what's going to happen here is because he's alone with her, he takes advantage. And the court got together at that time and said that if this could happen to the king's daughter, it could happen to anyone. And they made a rule that men are not supposed to be alone in a room with women, unless it's their wife or their sister or whatever, or the, you know, somebody that, and this is what we call, it's called yichud, being alone with the opposite, and there are different ways, if the door is open, if they're in the same house, you know, if people can hear, that it would be permitted, but these rules the rabbis enacted based on what happened here, we tried to prevent these kinds of things. We realize that there's human nature, but if people aren't left alone with other people, then you prevent a certain amount of these kind of things from happening. So, so let's see what happens. Batika Shelov, and so she.
Even part of Yichud is the sister and brother living together.
Well, on a permanent basis, not on a temporary basis. Verse 11, Matiga Shelav Lechol, so she brings him the food. But yeah, he grabs her. V'yamola bo'i shikfi imi, and he tells her what he has in mind. Verse 12, now she wanted nothing to do with it. V'tomolo alachai, no, my brother, al taneni, don't do this. So she gives him a whole speech, and she has many different claims. So first of all, she says, ki lo yasekein v'Yisrael. Forget about the king's son. This is unheard of. This would be atrocious. Now, by the way, this son was in the running to be the next king. You know, he was the king's oldest, you know, most capable son. And she says, look, this can't be done to the Jewish people. Al-Tasa, don't do the, you know, you don't want to do this because it's wrong. That's the first argument. She seeks to get him on a godly level. You know, religion, this is a wrong thing. This is disgusting. Doesn't sway him. Then she says, well, Vani ana oled, let's say he doesn't have any moral thoughts. Let's say he's not moral. So she says, but forget about Va'ana olech esker posi, how could I bear that embarrassment? And you're going to kill your reputation. And then that doesn't work either. And then she has a third idea. She says, you know, if you really want to marry me, I would consider it. But you got to ask permission from the king. Let's do this legit. He won't hold you back. He would accept your request. So she, now, if she was really his sister, there's no way the king would accept her request. Although it could be she just said that, even though it wasn't so. She was trying any way she could to get him to let her go. He didn't want to listen to her. Vayaximenu, and he was stronger than her. She fought back. That's where Vayaximenu means she fought back. Vayaneho, and he forced her. Vayishkavosa. Now, the Medrash says an interesting thing. It says that it's very difficult to understand what happened here. He was in love with her, and then right away in verse 15, we learn after he does it, v'yisenehu Amnon, sinagado, he hates her. It's hard to understand. So one, the Medrash says that she injured him, that when he was trying to rape her, she fought back, and he made it that he would never be able to have children. She hit him below the belt. She got him good, so to speak. So afterwards he wasn't real happy because he deserved him right, but he wasn't happy with her because she had fought back in that way and it injured him in that way. The Pirkei Avos says a very interesting thing. It says that he said he loved her. He never really loved her. He loved himself. And this is the thing, you know, young people are so foolish, you know, they're willing to do things to get people, boys, to look at them, you know, they'll have operations, and they'll skinny, and they'll drink, and they think that boy really loves them, but what he loves is himself. He wants to have a woman that looks this way, or whatever. It's so shallow, and we live in a time when people are educated, and yet you look on a college campus, and the women want the men to look at them and want to be recognized for how they look. It just makes no sense. Because if somebody marries for looks, they're marrying because of themselves. They're not marrying because they value the other person for who they are. They're not marrying because they have a gem and they have their soulmate. They're marrying because they enjoy having a beautiful woman and they love themselves. And so if they don't look that way first thing in the morning or the time changes, they're not going to, the love won't last. And that's one of the problems of society. But unfortunately, we live in such a society where it's so much into appearance and how they look. And so if a person loves themselves, the love will turn into hate. Whereas it's interesting, it mentions the love of David and Yonasan, who would have been natural competitors, and they loved each other because they valued who they were. And so even when they were put into competitive roles, they still looked out for one another. Because when a person values somebody, it's a different kind of love when they're just looking out for themselves. So over here, some people argue that when you love food, it's like that. You know, beforehand, you love the food, and you don't love the food. As soon as you eat it, you feel bad about it. You know, oh, I ate too much, and I wish I didn't eat that. And it's just a desire for food, right? So Amnon hated her very much. Kigadola sina, his hatred was as much as her love. Asher v'yamar la'amnon kumi lechi. Here, he does a terrible thing. He not only committed a crime, but he makes it even worse. He says, get out of here. Kumila, get up and leave. Now, if you remember, David also committed a crime and didn't fix it. He made it worse. In a certain way, that's a punishment for what he did. In other words, he took a woman, and then he tries to take care of her husband or do a cover-up or whatever. It's supposed to be an example for him. There's some question why David is kind of quiet through all this. David was aware that it was because of his example that perhaps this happened. In other words, if Dovin hadn't taken Bathsheba, then his own son would have never... It was this idea that if you see the woman you want, you take her. That set the wrong example in the household. And Dovin says, well, I'm sorry. So a lot of parents will do that. They'll say, well, do what I tell you. And they'll say, Mom and Dad, didn't you ever do this when you were young? Yeah, but now I know better. So your kids want the chance to make the same mistake you made, right? It's a hard sell. It's hard to tell kids not to do the things that we did. So could be why David was quiet. So she tells him, she says, what you're going to do is going to make it worse to send her out in front of everybody. But he didn't want to listen to her. And he wouldn't even lead her out himself. He tells his servant, take this thing, get rid of this thing. He's like so disgusted with her. And lock the door after her. It's just so terrible what this fellow did. And the Torah commands that, one of the things is, I would say that there is one difference. We always look at rape, and we assume it's the more physical kind of rape, where a woman is forced in the worst way. There is what they call date rape, where the woman doesn't want to do it, but she doesn't necessarily hate the fellow who's doing it. She just tries to push away the advances that are made, and she doesn't feel able to stop the other party. And in many cases, when the Torah discusses it, it's that kind of... If a person was harmed by somebody else, they wouldn't want to marry them afterwards. They wouldn't want to stay, keep that relationship. They would have no desire for that. But the Torah says that after, if a man did force a woman to go beyond where she wanted to go, the least he could do was offer to marry her. Right? That's the... So over here, she says that to him. She kind of says, don't send me away. And she wasn't totally repulsed with him, or it didn't seem that way. Or she asked him to... The Torah says, maybe try to make good after he did what he did. Again, I'm not really judging it. We don't like to go into the details of these things, or no. But I'm just saying it doesn't. It's not defined exactly. Today we have. Like I said, it's just she said no, and he didn't listen to her. Verse 18. V'olah katonis pasim, and she wore the robes of the princesses. Kidosh mosem abusus milas v'yetsa osem mishorso hachutza, and these garments were like torn, and she was like thrown out in front of everybody in these torn garments, and the door was locked behind her. She wasn't even given a chance to protect her dignity. Verse 19. Fatikik tamar eifal rosha, and she puts ashes on her head. So it's very interesting. Some of the commentators say that now that she was like a married woman, because she had relations with somebody, she wanted to cover her hair. That's why she says she put something on her hair. Ukasonis apasim eshela kara, and she had torn her garments, to tossam yada rosha, she put her hand on her head, and she went bitter and crying and screaming, and her brother saw her, and she said, I'm the chichayim, what happened? Was it your who did this to you? She said, perhaps we should be quiet about it. You can't focus on the people that if they focus too much on the hurt, they relive it, and it's not necessarily. He was saying to her, "Ladavarza, kind of don't worry about it." It could be he was telling her he would take care of it. We're going to see that he does take care of it. We don't know the rest of the conversation, but we're going to see that he takes revenge for her. And she was desolate. This was a horrible thing for her, and she then stayed with her brother Avshalom. So let's see what the king's reaction was. 21. Vahamelik David and King David Amelik Shamath called Vahameela. David heard about it and he was horrified. Vahyikarla, he was very angry, but he couldn't say anything. Below Dabar Avshalom im Amnon. Well, he didn't say anything. Now the question is, well, what about Avshalom? He was supposed to stick up for his sister. So why didn't he do something? So Avshalom also does a little bit sneaky over here. We're going to see this about Avshalom, that he has plans. He makes plans. He knew that if he showed his anger now, that his brother would never trust him, and he wouldn't be able to take revenge on him. But if he pretended not to be angry, he pretended not to say anything, then when the time comes, he could get him back. He didn't say good or bad. He hated him. Al-Dabar Sha'inas Tamar, because of what he had done. He did a terrible thing. Verse 23, V'hinah Sha'inas Yomim, and he waited his time. It was 2 years went by.
He's harboring this
hate. Yes, yeah, he's waiting for the chance.
In the meantime, what has happened to Tamar during all this time? She's been disgraced. She's hiding in her brother's house. Is this her life after that? Is this
we don't know. The Torah many times just gives you one episode and doesn't tell you that.
And that's it. It's not discussed again.
We don't know again what happened. Okay. It's almost like the story of Dina. We also don't know. There are all kinds of midrashim that later on she married Shimon, or she went down to Egypt, or we don't know what happened.
Could she have given birth? I mean...
There's no detail. We don't know anything else.
Is Absalom and Tamar full brothers and sisters?
Yeah. I believe so. It seems like it.
It's so hard with all these wives.
Yes, very hard to figure out. And then some of them may have been born before they were wives or after. It's very hard to figure out. Mm-hmm. 23. Vayishna say was after Vigodim Avshalom Baal Chatzar. So Avshalom was doing a shearing. In those days, just like a farmer, at the end of the harvest season, he was very grateful to Hashem that he finally, we invest and we put a lot of work in things, and then when it comes to fruition, we have to celebrate, we have to thank Hashem. And so if you had a flock, and the flock, the wool, was ready to shear, so you made a big party to thank Hashem. A person, when the crop comes in, when their ship comes in, they should be very thankful. So he was getting ready to do a shearing. So he lived in Bachatzur near Ephraim, Vikra Avshalom l'kol b'nei ha-melech. So he invited all his brothers. He invited all the royals. V'yavah Avshalom ha-melech. So now if David was, again, the royals had to ask permission from the king, because, the king ran the palace. So V'yavah Avshalom went to his father, the king. V'yavah Hineina goes in l'abdecha. He says, we're doing a shearing. Yes, na melech l'abadabu l'abdecha. Let everybody's invited. So I guess he knew the king wasn't going to go. The king has more things to do than go to every shearing. But let all the kids go. Yama Melakov Shah Albani Yal Nelakulano. It's not good to have everybody go. Somebody's got to run the country. We need, it's not good to have all the sons of the king in one place. Below Nikbadalev Vivitispo, and Avshalom pressed him. Below Avalechas, and he didn't let it go. Vivake, when the king gave his blessing. So it's very insightful here. We want to figure out what happened to David's kids. How did these things happen with his kids? So with Amnon, it happened because he set a bad example. It's very scary because your kids watch you. And so they learn from you. Unfortunately, they don't only learn the good things. They learn other things too. So Amnon learned from David one thing. Now Avshalom, why did Avshalom turn out the way he did? The answer was that he could get what he wanted out of his father. Right? David said no. And what does Avshalom do? Please? Right? Doesn't take no for an answer. How many of us have kids like that that don't take, they plead a little bit and they eventually get what they want, right? Who can refuse a cute child, right? But eventually they get what they want. And unfortunately, if a child is raised that way, that they get what they want and they're never told no, or no's they're not a firm no, they don't always turn out right. Everybody needs a discipline. They have to have certain things that are clear. 26. V'yarm Avshalom v'lo yelech na itanu Amnon achi. And Avshalom said, well, what about Amnon? My brother. I want to have him. Why do you need to go? So he begs him. V'yishak ito es Amnon, and he commands Amnon to go. It's called b'nei ha-melech. So Avshalom pushes a little bit and he gets what he wants. 28. So Avshalom, he had his men, he had his lads. He said, "Ro no kitov." He says, everybody's going to have their wine. Wait till Amnon is a little bit drunk. But Martelem, and then when he's drunk, and he won't be able to flee, and he won't be able to fight, hiko es Amnon, then kill him. Vamitimoso altiro, and don't be afraid. I'm commanding you, hiskilvayne, but you have to be men of valor. And this is what he commanded his henchmen, and he you see that he clothed it in the form of a mitzvah. It wasn't a mitzvah. Is there a mitzvah to take revenge? There's a mitzvah to punish wrongdoers, but there's the right person to do it. Did you remember what was David's mistake with Uriah Hachiti, that he sent him out to battle to get killed? So we had learned, or we had mentioned, that many people felt that Uriah deserved death because he was more loyal to Yoav than he was to David. And David had told him, you know, I want you to go home. And he said, oh, no thanks. You don't tell the king no thanks. He just, you know, he was not Lord. So Uriah really deserved death. So if that's true, why was David punished? The answer is that David wasn't the one to decide that. After you fall in love with his wife, you're not the one to decide he should be killed. You should have sent him to court. Let them decide it. They're impartial. And then there wouldn't have been any question. So here also, Avshalom, what he did wasn't wrong. Amnon got what he deserved. Hashem worked this out to get, you know, he got exactly what he... But Avshalom should have gone to court. He should, as a brother, he should not have been the one to decide the judgment. He also had a father around. He should have gone to his father and said, I want you to do something, you know. There's a right way to do things. And so this is very appropriate in a sense of showing David what we call mita keneged mita. In other words, he punished somebody without going to court. And so now his own son goes and punishes someone without going to court, without asking the right people first.
Reverend, could there be, I mean, it's an odd connection that Levi and Shimon, when they
It's a similar kind of thing, yeah. There it was even stronger because there were a lot of tribes that were had treaties together, and so by killing Shechem, they were potentially putting the family in danger. That was the fear there. Most people feel that he wasn't angry that he killed Shechem. He was more angry that they killed the whole village, or that this would cause... Sometimes it's proper to take revenge, but you have to look at the ramifications of it. If it's going to cause a war and cause other people to get killed, it's not appropriate. And so there could be other factors.
So
there.
What would you do in a case like that? If revenge is really called for, but it's too consequential, then
so sometimes you have to leave it into Hashem's hands. So v'yasinar Avshalom lanam kasher sivav, they did exactly what they told. V'kumu kol b'nei man. Now they're at this party and they're all drinking and having a great time and they're at the shearing, and then all of a sudden somebody's killed. So when somebody's killed, you get out of there as quick as you can. People hear the bullets fly, get out of there. V'yakumu kol b'nei man for yikuyisha. Everybody scattered. Everybody got out of there real quick. V'yuhei medev v'shmua ba el David. Now David hears a message. Avshalom is kol b'nei ha-melech. Rumors are terrible, right? Many of you ever heard, sometimes people get the wrong rumors. And again, sometimes, can you imagine what David thought to hear such a rumor that all of his kids had been killed? Can you imagine the anguish a person would, if they heard such a thing, what the, you know, it couldn't be anything worse for a person to hear that every single one of their children died. So David hears a rumor that they all died. Nobody, because the banquet, everybody scattered. In other words, there were lots of rumors. There was no way to know exactly what happened. They knew that someone had been killed. And at Avshalom's house, everybody scattered. So verse 31, V'yakamach V'yakhi, the king, he got up and he tore Kriya. And he fell flat on his face. Everybody tore their, such a terrible, they thought his whole, all the king's children that he had worked for and raised and the entire royal family was wiped out. Now again, what David had been through in his life, remember all of his parents' family had been massacred by Moab? You know, he just had so much tragedy in his life. 32, and Yonadav, the brothers, told him, he brought the report. He said, tell the king, this is not everybody was killed. Only Amnon levado meis. It was only Amnon that was killed. This was really revenge that Avshalom was waiting since what happened with his sister. 33.
Is Jonadab that man, the tricky man?
I think there's a different one. Let's check. That was... Right, let's see, that was... Yeah, it's a similar name, let's see. That's Yonadav Ish Chacham, and this is Yonadav Ben Shimi Achi David. The son of maybe it's the same one. Amon Reish Mo Yonadav Ben Shimi. Maybe it is the same one. Okay, it's interesting that he's.
It is.
It's interesting that he appears at this time. I don't know what the significance of that is. Not everybody says he was so bad. Some people say he was just trying to cheer up his brother. He wasn't. He was telling him you should ask the king. In other words, it's not so clear that he was. There are two views about him. But at any rate, he said, don't tell the king that everybody was killed. Avshalom was only trying to get Amnon. 33. The king shouldn't worry about it. Give him the true report. 34. Now Avshalom was in danger because he thought that they would take revenge against him for killing his brother. So he ran away. And meanwhile, the lookout man went to the palace to try to see if the survivors were coming. And he saw in the distance a large group of all the princes coming back. And he says exactly what I told you. Now all the other princes are coming back. 36. And as he finished, we see a call of Yivku, and they all cried. It was a big crying. It was a terrible tragedy for the family to have this happen. 37. And now the second in line to the king, the royal that at this point would have been the one to take over, he runs to the Gentiles. He feels that he's in danger. He runs to his mother's family. David HaMelech was very upset. He never got over it, really. All the days he mourned for his son. Now, what is he mourned for Avshalom and he mourned for Amnon. Avshalom Baruch Ve'Gosher V'Hisham. He was there 3 years. That's a long time. 39. V'Tachol David HaMelech Lasei Sel Avshalom. And as time passed, David began to feel less angry with Avshalom and began to miss him. It's the way the nature of time is that you forgive people, and that kinachem al Amnon, and he Amnon, there's nothing you could do about it. Amnon was no longer here, kimeis, and so sometimes you have to build on what you have. And so David at this point began to feel a little differently about Avshalom, but we have this this great tragedy that happened. We have the idea that David was punished for his actions with Bathsheba, and this was part of that punishment. Now, you might ask, just because David was punished, why did Tamar deserve to be punished? So, we don't believe that one person is punished in order for someone else to be punished. Hashem has to have his reason why he does things. We don't really, in other words, we're not saying that if somebody needs to be punished, that someone else could be hurt because someone needs. But the question was, why did David deserve the troubles that he had? David deserved his troubles because of Bathsheba and what he had done. Why other people deserve what they got, we don't know. We don't know all the details. We're not Hashem. That's not us, up to us to speak to. This idea that the lawlessness or the taking of things into your own hands, David got a first-hand example of what happened. And we had the lesson that the rabbis learned that of human nature, that you have to separate sometimes that a person's lust for a woman or love for a woman can be very strong, and you can prevent that from happening if they're not left alone or they take precautions, and therefore they instituted from this time that those precautions should be taken. And and that's kind of the message here. And I'll start with the message that we started with, that even when tragedy happens, Hashem gives us the opportunity to turn tragedy into a good thing, and to learn from it and to grow from it.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.